The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.
Hey, welcome back to the Kiefer and Curry Show here on TKR. What's up there, brother? You doing all right?
Tony, I am going a mile a minute today. I started off kind of sketchy. I don't know. I didn't really eat much yesterday. I was involved in a lot of things, so I think it caught up with me. Now I've had a good meal since this morning's session on the Need to Know program, and I am fired up and back in business for Kiefer and Curry.
There you go. You know, you do a lot of traveling. I do not do hardly any traveling at all. As a matter of fact, the last time I flew was the national championship game in 2012. Down in Miami is the last time I got an airplane, so it's been 12 years. It's not to say I don't like to fly. I used to fly every year out to Vegas. I love to fly because usually I'm going on vacation. You, I would assume, love to fly because you're normally going to see your boys or going to Vegas or going to see a game somewhere with one of your boys. And so it's a lot of fun. So you've traveled this grand landscape of this United States of America. And so you have certainly dipped your toes into the gene pool of the cultures of this particular wonderful country we live in as well. And you would certainly say, yeah, whenever you tell people where you're from, you're like Birmingham, what do they usually say to you?
You know, there's usually like a delayed reaction.
That's exactly what they say. They go,
Birmingham. Yeah, I hear that's pretty nice. But, you know, Tony, I don't know if ever, and I am really, really proud of this community. I wasn't here, of course, in the tumultuous 60s and all of the civil rights disarray and all the terrible things that happened here. Was just a small child living in our nation's capital at the time. But I think this city is fairly unified. I mean, we have problems like every other city, but I think people are still kind of obsessed with that vision of Birmingham being this bastion of racism and division. And that's not the reality that we live in, but people always take a little bit of a pause and wait for you to reassure them that Birmingham's all good.
Very true. And while I think it's important that we carry that torch for the rest of the United States, and the rest of the world, when it comes to that part, I do think, and I wasn't born here and I wasn't around during those times in the 60s. I moved here in 88, but I do think that we faced our fears, let's say we were forced to face our fears, you know, from having Wallace standing in the doorways to, you know, what happened down at the bridge and Rosa Parks, everything. So we were forced to run through a lot of those things. And I think because of that, it is not rare at all to see a black man holding hands with a white woman walking down the middle of Southside. You don't see that anywhere in this country. You ain't going to see it in Boston. And I'm not broad brushing. Cincinnati, you'll never see. If you're listening right now, if you go to Cincinnati, you will never see a black person walking with a white person, let alone holding hands. Here it's pretty wide open. And I take a lot of pride in the fact that's comforting to know. And it brings a smile to my face whenever I see a white parent with a black child, or anytime there's any type of interracial goings on in anything. I just think it's wonderful because we're all getting along, and it's like you said, it paints a much different picture than what we're seeing with the hoses and the dogs every time it seems like Birmingham's mentioned the news.
Yeah, I just recently saw they're rehashing the 1964 Birmingham church bombing downtown that killed four little girls, which is one of the most abhorrent things that I can ever recall from recent American history. But I mean, let's stress what's happening now. I mean, Tony, that was 60 years ago.
Indeed. All right, that's not what I want to talk about today, though.
Oh, okay. Well, that's fine.
I do want to talk about things, a little different things, because I think when we're asked here about people on the West Coast, what do you think we usually what do we usually say about people on the West Coast? When people are like, I'm from California, what do we usually say?
My usual phrase is, oh, you're from the land of make-believe and delusion. California has gone so over the top. with all of their nonsensical policies and political correctness and all of the things that they allegedly stand for. I heard, and I did a show on our local program here a couple years ago, The Ride Home, with my broadcast partner, Terry Quillian. And we were talking about, there was a guy running for Senate who had been like the president of the Senate there or whatever. And he said, well, people just need to pay attention, because what's happening in California right now is just a prelude to what's going to happen in the rest of the country. And I just said, God help us if that's true.
Yeah. I picked my youngest up in the carpool the other day, and was looking at some of the
your daughter, right?
Yes, my daughter. Mm-hmm. And I have to be careful, because I've mentioned my daughter on my podcast in the past. Whenever I do, it's a lightning rod for people to reach out. So please do so, and that's why I'm transparent in that way. But obviously, my 12-year-old is in a totally different world than I was when I was 12 years
old. Oh, for sure.
And I'll be looking at the boys. Waiting for the carpool, and I'll see some boys that I would think, you know, because she's already talking about dating. She's already talking to boys. She's already handing notes to
boys. Yeah, she's very advanced for her age and the limited exposure I've had with her.
That's what I thought. Then to come to find out that, quite frankly, she's right where she about wants or needs to be. All of her friends are like 12 or 13, and they're already asking boys out, and they're passing notes. I like you. Do you like me back? We just didn't do that.
Yeah, what a different time.
The thing, they're starting their periods on average 3 to 4 to 5 years younger than they were when I'm not a gynecologist, but you ask any woman that's about our age, they would say 14, 15 years of age when they normally start their period. Now it's nothing for my 11-year-old or 12-year-old to talk about. She has not had hers yet. Hope she doesn't mind me saying that, but it's certainly something that she's very cognizant of. And her mom's done a wonderful job at speaking to her about that. So it's not something that's scary to her. Cause that was
God you don't have to have that.
No doubt. I got enough issues with my sons to let alone. So yeah,
I am so blessed to have sons, because that would have been a subject that would have been very uncomfortable. And I don't know, Tony, I admire you letting her have this kind of streak of independence. I'm not convinced I wouldn't have locked my daughter in the basement and never allowed her to go out in public.
Well, I have told her that she's got, you know, at 35, she's allowed to start dating. And we kind of laugh about that. But I picked out one particular boy at the carpool the other day, and she said, oh, no, that's not even possible. And I said, why? She goes, he's way too zesty. And I said, zesty? And she goes, yeah, he's zesty. Everyone knows he's zesty. And I said, okay. I took a stab at what
tried
I thought.
Tried to act like you knew exactly what she was talking about.
Because if I said, hey, how you feeling today?
And
I'm feeling pretty zesty. Zesty to at least my 12-year-old means gay. And I assumed that zesty was gay, first of all, because she said there's no way she could date that person. And obviously, zesty, I think of flamboyant. I think of bright. I think of flowery. And so I think of all this. So I'm like, okay, so zesty is the new phrase for being gay.
Interesting.
And I said, yeah. And I said, what makes you think this person is zesty? And she started talking about how he holds his hands, how he speaks, how a lot of it was theatrical. A lot of it was how he moves his legs, how he walks, how he runs. And I just thought it was really interesting. And I was like, you know, that's not changed. I mean, we kind of felt the same way growing up. We certainly had friends of ours that talked a little differently. It wasn't that they weren't into playing sports, but maybe they had a little bit of a lisp, or maybe more of a female genic, type of voice. Maybe it was a little high pitched, but we all had reasons why we thought maybe it wasn't just because, you know, Johnny and, you know, ninth grade hadn't been laid yet. It wasn't always that. There were some things about that particular person, some characteristics that you would possibly say, you know what, my gaydar's up on this, and this does not seem like this would be a straight person. Well, the Gallup poll in 2023 asked 19,637 adults in the United States if they would please tell Gallup what sexual preference or they were. And they basically said 86.3% people said they were straight. 7.1% said they were LGBTQ. 6.6% said they had no opinion. And 0.8% said they were transgender. And I've always been of the, and I realize there's, you know, the smallest group has the loudest voice. I understand the LGBTQ community. I understand the movement. I also understand why people don't want their favorite baseball player wearing a rainbow on his shoulder, because it is such a small number. And why should the Miami Marlins have to have an LGBTQ community day? Why should we have to have a celebratory day of someone's sexuality at the Cincinnati Reds ballpark or at the New York Giants NFL game? I understand that. I get that. It's all about being accepting. It's about money. It's about these pros and anybody saying that we're all acceptant and we're tolerant of any type of this type of behavior to let you know, hey, listen, doesn't matter what your sexual preference is, you're welcome to buy New York Giants tickets here. That's what it is.
Yeah.
That's why, you know, the NBA takes that to another level. Okay. Mm-hmm. The strange thing about this is, 7 years ago, in 2016, that number of LGBTQ was 3.5%. That number,
so it's literally doubled.
It is literally doubled. That number 6 years prior to that was 1.9%.
Wow.
We're talking less than 2% of people in the United States of America just over the course of the last 12 years. We have gained 5%. Of our population, and we have roughly 380, 390 million people in this country. I don't know how many of those are adults, but I've always been under the, and I work with a psychologist who, by the way, has a gay brother, has an uncle who's gay, Dr. Josh Klapo. He openly talks about that. We talk about these issues all the time. I'm like, why in the world does it seem like there are more gay people now on this earth? And one of the reasons is I think it's more accepting, that more people are willing to step out. Another reason is I think that because we're learning more about our own sexuality, perhaps a lot of people are gay that didn't believe they were gay or maybe didn't think they were gay till later on in life. I can only speak for myself, but I know that, you know, I didn't have any gay friends in high school. Not that I know of.
I can't think of a single person that I would have stamped that way at that time. I mean, there were people you knew were coming from a little different direction, but I don't remember us labeling people like they seem to now.
Do you remember the first
or people labeling themselves, especially?
Do you remember the first time? And I won't even pigeonhole you into saying you have a gay friend. But have you?
No, I've got several.
So when was the at what age were you when you met your first gay friend? I'm talking, and you can just say first gay individual, because I can say I remember I was 6 years old and my brother played in a band with this gay guy. And I remember, but I was 6 years of age. His name was Huey. And then later on in life, I actually didn't have my first gay friend until I was in my 30s, just because I didn't hang out in that type of group.
Yeah.
The funniest thing is the first date I ever had in Birmingham, I took a woman to this place called Jill Bar, which is down in Southside. And I'm sitting there with this young lady, a friend of mine. We're sitting upstairs and it's our first date and we're getting after it. We're hot and heavy. We're making out all over the place. And this gentleman walked up to me and said, listen, you know, we're very tolerant. We're open to everything around here. You can do whatever you want, but you are making some people feel uncomfortable. And I said, I'm sorry. We're just hot and heavy. It's our first date. He said, no, this is a gay bar. Now, if you want to go kissing your girlfriend at a straight bar, there's one right across the street. Knock yourself out. He said, but to see a man and a woman make out of here is making a lot of our gay customers uncomfortable.
How interesting.
And I said, well, now you know how I have felt my entire life.
Oh, that is amazing.
Isn't that funny? So I'm just wondering, in 6 years, are we going to have 14% gay people in this country? Is this number going to keep going up? Is it because we're more tolerant? You know, women are much more accepting of homosexuality in the LGBTQ community just because of their gender, because they're female. We know that a lot of women, I think I saw something like 63% of all women have kissed another woman. Doesn't mean they're gay. Doesn't mean they're going to be transgender or openly bisexual. They have just experimented. Mm-hmm. Men don't experiment. Kip Kiefer and Tony Curry ain't going to go, you know what? I saw something funny the other night. You want to try it? It ain't going to happen. All right. But, no. but women will. And they normally do that. And I can remember going to bars, you know, in Southside and going to bars on the Capstone, on the Capstone and watching these two girls walk in with two boys, their boyfriends. And by the end of the night, the two girls are making out. The two guys are just laughing. They're like, yeah, there they go. They're getting after it again. I'm like, anybody make you feel uncomfortable? Because I understand we're more accepting. And I do believe as humans, that is important that we are respectful and open to debating what type of sexuality you are. I know biblically speaking, you can't do that. I realize from a religious standpoint, some people think it's disgusting. I understand that. Yeah, you always go back to, you know, hate the sin, love the sinner. Just because someone's gay, because I say this all the time. I can tell you right now, in the locker room at the University of Alabama, there are about 11 gay men playing football. You see the numbers. There's 120 guys playing football for the University of Alabama at Auburn and UAB. If roughly 6 or 7% of all men in this country are gay, then you got 10 gay guys in the locker room. And then they ain't openly coming out and, you know, saying, hey, by the way, I'm gay. Let's go get them, boys. Third and four, whatever. But I mean, there's a lot more of gay people around us than and certainly during our time. They must have been everywhere. We just didn't know it. And they never came out of the closet to talk about it. And, you know, so much so that I didn't know Elton John was gay. I didn't know Mick Jagger was gay. And now, you know, you talk about that now and they're like, you didn't know Elton John was gay? I'm like, no, I knew him for his music. I knew that I knew that he was the Rocket Man and I loved your song and I loved Candle of the Wind. I loved Elton John for his music. But I had, first of all, it didn't matter whether he was gay or not because he was a great classic rock pianist. He was a great player. Didn't matter to me. And I guess more matters to people now than what your sexual preference is. But I'm just wondering, is this a trend that we're going to see moving up? Are we actually becoming more? Here's a question. Are we actually becoming more gay as I get older? Are there more and more gay people on? Are more people trying this way of life? Or is it just a phase we're going through? Is it cool? Is the LGBTQ a cool thing to be in right now? What's going on?
I talked about it this morning on Need to Know a little bit that I think that the determination of the progressive movement of trying to typecast everyone and put each person in their own box with whoever that they identify with, which I think is really designed to create division, not unity. I think it's a big part of this. I think that there's a certain strong movement in our society right now to make people identify what they are and how they feel and who they are, when that was something that was kind of left in the shadows in previous years. But it's not for the benefit, I believe, of all of us. I think it's to separate us more and divide us.
Interesting.
So we're not all unified in the same kind of cause in the same kind of way. And again, I have, I've said this repeatedly, and I mean it sincerely from the bottom of my heart. I don't care what your politics are, what your religion is, what you look like, what you believe, who you love, who you want to mess around with. All that's fine. But my problem is that in this day and age, if you're just tolerant, and there's no reason, not tolerance, a ridiculous word to me, because who cares what I tolerate? Mm-hmm. But it's accepting is, and I'm totally accepting. I will use that phrase happily. Anybody who wants to live their life any way they want, as long as it doesn't trample on my rights to do what I choose. But what bothers me is this movement now. You not only have to be accepting, if you're not like abundantly and overzealously supportive,
yes,
if you're not celebrating what these people are, then you're somehow typecast as a hater and somebody who is intolerant, and I find that just unacceptable.
You're phobic. I mean, you're homophobic. You're phobic.
Yeah, which is crap. Mm-hmm. I don't care. You know, if the next door neighbors want to have a giant Roman toga party with just dudes, as long as I don't have to, you know, participate or be acutely aware of it, that's their right to do whatever they want. But I don't need to stand there and applaud and be, celebrating this great event, because, you know, that's really not what I should be expected to do. Accepting, yes. Celebration, no.
I'm going to throw in Black Lives Matter only from the not even analytical, but from an analogy standpoint, in that it's a movement. Okay. The LGBTQ obviously is a movement, and it's obviously moving quite a bit because there are a lot of numbers there. I've got a friend of mine who runs the food bank down in Montgomery. He does wonderful yes. work, Heart of Alabama Food Bank, Michael Coleman. I could remember because it was the Montgomery Food Bank. And I remember during the George Floyd situations, we'll go all back to the Rodney King. That was way before our time. Before our time when he was at the food bank, but the Black Lives Matter movement was and is huge. It still is and was huge enough that people have painted streets with Black Lives Matter. We had Black Lives Matter painted on the NBA basketball courts and every single one. And Black Lives Matter was plastered everywhere. And if you weren't part of that movement, like you said, or you didn't want to paint Black Lives Matter on your basketball court, you were automatically assumed as a hater. As a person, well, you obviously don't stand by that, or you're not accepting of this type of life. So in other words, you tell me Black lives don't matter. And it's like, no, we have an NBA team here. We play basketball. And I remember some of the people, and I was talking to Michael about this, some people inside of his building down there at the Heart of Alabama Food Bank were like, how do you want to tackle this Black Lives Matter situation? And he said, what do you mean? And he said, well, do we need to put something on our website? Or do we need to have something on the bags we give out that says Black Lives Matter so everyone understands that we are certainly accepting of Black Lives and that do matter and that we stand tall in the tolerance of what our police officers do in and off the streets and blah, 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 blah. And he said, this is not my battle to wage here. This is not my war to battle here.
Yeah.
We are a food bank. We work for Feeding America. We serve food to people that are hungry. It's not about black or white. You could say it's about rich or poor, but it's not about it's a social economic situation where we're trying to help people that are trying to fill their stomachs for their friends and families and needy ones. And this has nothing to do with Black Lives Matter. And I don't see any reason why we should have to. And again, a lot of it comes down to the bottom dollar. I mean, it comes down to the bottom dollar. I could certainly understand. I want to say it was the Miami Marlins that went way over the top. And I say way over the top because the LGBTQ community was just, I mean, they were out in droves. I think they had an LGBTQ night, Miami Marlins. And maybe rightfully so, because there is a much stronger contingency of gay individuals in Miami than there is anywhere in the United States. Hell, the mayor of Key West is gay.
Key West overall is largely gay.
Largely gay, 75% gay, something like that.
Yeah.
And so if they want to have a special evening now, if the Birmingham Barons wanted to have an LGBTQ night at the ballpark in Birmingham, I would bet it wouldn't go over quite as well.
No.
And you would certainly have a lot of people talking about why do we have to make a perfectly all American sport like baseball and get into some geopolitical thing and make it bigger or smaller than what we're really trying to do here. We're trying to play baseball. And then to have that. It's almost like a rock and roller getting up halfway through a set and getting up there and going on a political rant. I'm not paying Don Henley to tell me about Alden Woods. I want to hear what's going on with the Eagles. I want you to play your music for us. And I know that the Dixie Chicks, now known as the Chicks, they certainly did it. Ted Nugent has this whole banter. I know Kid Rock has been hammered for going off on political views, and that's fine. If you know that's happening during the show and you just spent your $89 to sit in the second row and he's spitting out the N word and whatever. But I can't quite remember where I was going with this thought process, but the whole idea of not full force going in saying, this is something we need to say we believe in, or else people are going to think we don't like black people or don't like gay people, is absolutely ridiculous to me. And you just nailed it on the head. Why do we have to be part of this movement? Why can't we just do and be who we are? And why does that movement have to be part of everything we do?
Yeah. Just live and let live. The things you're talking about, this seeping into entertainment in all quarters, it's almost like acceptance by you and me personally and everybody else that's like-minded and thinks of things with common sense and logic, to be perfectly accepting of whatever people want to be or whoever people are. First of all, and I've said it many times, particularly on Need to Know, to me, to break down the Black Lives Matter situation, it was so transparently a political movement, not a movement to defeat racism per se. This was funded by the same people that are kind of leading the charge to try to transform our country into this cultural Marxist society. And Black Lives Matter has been exposed now big time with most of the money they've called the millions and millions of dollars that corporations have poured in, thinking that they're doing something noble and something that's going to be noteworthy and significantly socially conscious. So much of that money was misappropriated and spent to buy millions of dollars of mansions and different things. By
it was
the
only
leadership.
A matter of time. It was only a matter of time. I mean,
yeah.
So
they totally sold out. And I think most righteous and clearly thinking individuals of the African American community are saying, wait a minute, this was just a big scam. And as usual, we got nothing out of this. I think it's the most ridiculous thing in our modern day society that anyone judges any other person by the color of their skin. That is, you know, Martin Luther King had the greatest quote maybe in the history of all oration, when at the March on Washington in 1963, I dream that my children will be recognized for the content of their character, not the color of their skin. That is the most profound line ever, because anybody who's worth a damn, and I don't want to get too blatant here, but anybody that doesn't judge a person by who they are and what they're about and what they stand for and looks at artificial things like skin color. I mean, to me, you're talking about intolerance. The intolerance I have for anybody who looks at the world that way is absolutely profound, because it doesn't matter what you look like. It matters who you are.
Where do you think we're going to go with this LGBTQ community thing over the next, say, 10 to 15 years? I mean, I'm not saying it got to a boiling over. And it really, the Black Lives Matter thing, too, you don't really see it. You see it on T-shirts once in a while. It's not on the basketball courts anymore. You do see tolerance or sensitivity or compassion or love all. You still see some things like that on the back of helmets, on baseball caps. You still see some of those things, which and they're all, it's not just Black Lives Matter about gay marriage or anything else. It's just about me being more acceptive of everybody. And I think that's where it had to go. They kind of backed things off. And that's what we do. You know, we knee jerk and get excited. And we got to pick this down the middle of the street. And then, you know, 3 years later, we're driving over it and it's gone. And then we wait for the next thing to happen. And then until we can start protesting or get out and you know, cause. But I mean, the LGBTQ, are we getting more gay? I mean, I'm just asking. I mean, are we getting more gay? And because, I mean, there's a lot of things in the Bible that says the great tribulation's on the way. That's another one of those points where it's like, okay, what's going on here?
You know, if you look from a biblical standpoint, and I am certainly not as religious as I would fancy myself to ideally be, but if you look at any kind of religious doctrine, there are suggestions, particularly in the Revelation section of the Bible, which has always been highly controversial, that we will reach an end times where humanity will be judged on how they've conducted themselves and where they are, and the righteous will advance to some other level. I don't want to get into some kind of religious discussion here, but you look at the signs and different things that are happening in our society and in our world, and you wonder if there's some validity, and are we on the brink of beginning the steps toward those end times? And I'm not enough of a religious scholar to really be able to draw direct correlations, but it's certainly a viable thing that we have to think about, that you know, in the course of mankind, we have always found a way since the beginnings of time to kind of damage ourselves and take away the unbelievable privilege we have to have this life, and division and all of this conflict that's happening, and all of the fact that so many that are in leadership positions sell out to the almighty dollar and sacrifice their principles and their beliefs just to be personally enriched. And that's a bad sign that I see, Tony. As far as the LGBTQ ABCDEFG movement, I don't know how many letters are involved in that now. It's an awfully big tent that they keep trying to include more and more people kind of on the fringes. And again, I have no problem with, you know, who you love is your business and how you conduct yourself, but I worry that it's been billed as somehow fashionable now, that it's, you know, that taking this identity makes you more accepted, because you and I have talked a lot. I have not found the whole dynamic of human relationships, particularly with females, a very easy thing to navigate. It has always been an area that I have been uncomfortable and unsure. And it's pretty sad for a guy on the brink of 60 to be saying that I still am not comfortable in that.
We haven't figured out women yet. And now you're going to now you're telling me you're gay.
And like, how ridiculous is that? I mean, after decades of experience, you would think we would be in a totally commanding position to have all that figured out. But I think it even gets more difficult as time goes on.
There's no doubt. To get back to the religious aspect, and then we'll let it fly. We do the show, by the way, ABC 3340, called The Starting Lineup. We'll do it again on ABC coming up this Saturday morning from 10:30 to 11 o'clock. Tim Brando will join the show here with Kip Kiefer and Tony Curry. Yep. Whether it's intolerances, whether it's peace mongering, whether it's war, whether it's battles, whether it's religious ongoings, whatever it is, you go back 10 years, 50 years, 100 years, every televangelist is always going to say that we're pointing towards the end of times, mainly because we are. Every day that we live, we're a day closer to Jesus coming back, and that's just the truth. If you believe in the Bible and his word. And so that's true. Yes, it is coming. I don't know if it's going to be sooner than later, but you ask anybody who's up there Bible and thumping their feet every Wednesday night or Sunday, depending on what your denomination is, it's never going to be as good as they want it to be. So I think there's always going to be bad things in the world. That's what makes the world the place we live in, is there bad stuff and good stuff. Hey, great stuff, my friend. Go do your thing. We'll catch up next week with Need to Know. By the way, if you missed his show, he had a very special guest. Talk about that real quick. You had a young lady on. It was fantastic. Yeah.
Terry Evans, who's been a friend of mine since back in high school, we don't have a lot of contact, but I did catch a couple of weeks ago that she had joined a very proactive group that is trying to ensure election integrity and have the right candidates that really believe in our country and our founding fathers and our Constitution. So she's on today on Need to Know, and we had an interesting conversation. But her boyfriend, Tony, I know you listened in, and I think you even had some off-camera conversations. Mm-hmm. Gary McKee in Atlanta is Tony Curry in Birmingham. Tony, he was before your time. Gary was really popular in the late 70s and through the 80s on Atlanta radio. And if you ask a man on the street, who's the most prominent figure in the history of Atlanta radio, they would tell you it's Gary McKee. And he was a rock guy, and he did all of the great spoofs and different things, different parody pieces. He was the Tony Curry of his time. And you are the equivalent personality here in Birmingham, and how blessed all of a sudden that I am to be in contact with you and back in contact. I knew Gary very casually back in the day when he was prominent in Atlanta media, but I really am looking forward. Maybe we can do it on Kiefer and Curry. Maybe we can do a two-parter, do a Need to Know Kiefer and Curry doubleheader on this subject. But I want to get you and Gary McKee together to kind of reminisce about your experiences in being really icons in two separate markets, but very equivalent careers. And I'm absolutely fascinated to pursue that subject. One of the great parodies Gary McKee ever did, they did kind of a joke. I think he even did the lyrics. I'm looking forward to asking, but they did a song once about a guy whose wife had disappeared and his car was missing, and his best friend was out of touch. And the verse of that, I'm trying to untangle the weird mystery of the Buford Triangle. And Buford, of course, is a suburb of Atlanta. His car and his girlfriend and his best friend had disappeared, and he was thinking it was a natural phenomenon like the Bermuda Triangle. Really hilarious stuff. I'm going to see if I can dig that up, because I think you guys will really hit it off, because, I mean, you're two giants in your industry and respective markets, and I'm really looking forward to doing that show.
Well, you're very, very sweet to say that. I really, really appreciate that. You know how I feel about working with you. It's just been a joy, and I can't wait to see, you know, how big and how wonderful we can do. And I'm very grateful for all the opportunities you've given me. Yeah, Gary, I've maybe it's because I've heard his name about a million times today, but I didn't know who Gary McKee was. And so I'm talking, so we're doing a Need to Know, and there's Terry's face, and he shows up in the middle of your show. And I wasn't aware if you were actually looking at the teleprompter or not, so you could tell whether the guest had joined it. So I came on and I said, hey, by the way, Terry's on. She joined the show. And you're like, great, because she was supposed to join us last week and she couldn't. So she was coming on. So Gary was in the background and he was he was telling her how to work the technology of it. And I said, it sounds like you're working with a radio guy over there, because he's trying to tell you what to do. And she's like, oh my God, yeah, he's a radio guy. And I was like, oh really? And I was trying to make a joke. And I said, so how long is your boyfriend? And I don't know, Terry's in her 60s, I guess. How long have you been dating this guy? And she's like, oh, he's been in radio forever. It's Terry McKee. Like I was supposed to know who Terry McKee was. And I don't. It's not that I don't. I know Rick Dees is. I know Scott Shannon is. I know Howard Stern.
You were in high school in Cincinnati at the time. He was rolling in Atlanta, but it was very equivalent, because if you ask a person on the street here, if you say Birmingham Radio Classic Rock, they're going to say Tony Curry. Yeah. If you say Atlanta during the boom years, who was the dominant personality on Atlanta radio? It was Gary McKee. Yeah. So having you guys both poised here for kind of a session to reminisce about your careers and exchange notes, I think it's going to be awesome.
That'd be great. We love that opportunity. And I knew that he was way back, because when I asked him where he worked, he started out with AM.
Yeah.
When he said, well, I worked at AM radio, I was like, AM radio.
Yeah. Here's some irony for you, Tony. His big years of success were on WQXI, which is now a sports station that you actually went over and did some work for.
The game, it sure is. And Gary actually did some work up in Cincinnati radio. We were talking.
I did not know that. That's interesting.
He actually worked. He worked 2 days in Cincinnati, so I can ask him why it was only 2 days. Because I can only imagine why a disc jockey would go into a market and work 2 days and then decide to leave. We'll talk to him about that. So check it out. Get the TKR app and certainly check out our podcast. We'll have it available. And watch us right here on the Tony Curry wonderful page, the YouTube page. Our YouTube page is doing really, really well. People obviously want to see what we're talking about. We can do that. And then watch us again on ABC 3340, 10:30, 11 o'clock coming up on Saturday morning. Kip, thank you, brother. I'll talk to you a little bit.
Tony, it was awesome. Thank you.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.